Hi, my name is Marcus, and this is a companion podcast for the CG Jung Help Desk Meetup Group. I host live events on Zoom every 2 weeks about the concepts and ideas of the Swiss psychologist Carl Gustav Jung. Every event, I give a presentation about the Jungian concept, so have fun with this event's topic.
And I want to welcome you all to a new movie analysis about an older movie, which is the movie Jaws by Steven Spielberg. And this is a movie discussion I've been looking forward for a very long time. I've referenced it oftentimes in earlier events because I really like the movie, because it's a very good movie, but also because there's some really, really interesting things that can be explored through a Jungian lens. So the disclaimer is, like always, this is not a Jungian movie. So for this one, I'm pretty sure that it wasn't the goal of Steven Spielberg to say, okay, let's make a movie that has a lot of Jungian concepts about how the psyche works, how therapy works, right? How people should approach life and what happens to them in their life. But rather, he tried, and everybody involved, to tell a really good story. And this story, when we tell stories, we often do it in an archetypal way. We use symbols, images that have been used throughout human history, and people just like to tell stories that way. When people tell a story, it happens to be a certain way, and when people like to experience a story, it happens to be a certain way. And these are all the ways that Jung looked at it as he watched and observed and analyzed religions, mythology, and just stories in general all over the world to see, okay, what does it tell us about human beings? Because if you have geographically and temporally separated tribes of people talking about certain topics, and you have the same things popping up again and again and again, there's a sign, okay, there's something deep inside the psyche of the people. And this part, this layer, which is common to all human beings today and in the past, he called the collective unconscious. And the stories that we tell and the ideas that we have come out of this collective unconscious, being formed by the experiences that human beings had in the past. And I will give you a summary about the movie, which is a very straightforward movie. Jaws plays in an idyllic beach town on the American East Coast and follows the journey of local police chief Martin Brody, who wants to close the beaches because of a deadly shark attack, but gets ignored. The shark attacks intensify, causing Brody to head out into the ocean and kill the beast. Basically, we have here a killing the dragon story, and the dragon in this case is the shark. And the movie is pretty old by now, but sometimes still popular. But back then, it was a huge change for Hollywood and the Hollywood system. There are many firsts associated with this movie. For example, the term blockbuster to describe a movie in modern terms got coined by Jaws, because Jaws, when it came out, it was so popular that people lined up to see the movie, right? Then really cinemas got flooded who really wanted to see it. And there were many reasons for that. One reason was TV back then was pretty new. The movie came out in the 70s, and there was the first time that really there was intensive TV advertisement, a lot of local tie-ins. So the modern marketing strategy for advertising movies happened with Jaws and started with Jaws. Also, to set a movie in summer, for us, this is completely normal that the biggest movies start in summer, but in the past, this was not the case. The biggest movies are shown around Christmas because there were holidays. Normally, summertime was a dead time because nobody wanted to be inside, but everybody wanted to be outside. Also, wide releases to have hundreds or even thousands of screens showing the same movie at the same time was also not done back then. It was even a sign of a bad movie that you dump it so that there would be no reviews to discourage people seeing the movie. So the style of marketing and presenting modern movies started with Jaws in the 70s. And Jaws was incredibly successful. In modern money, in modern terms, it earned over $2 billion. And it was special from that side, the marketing side, the success side, but also it was back then a pretty, let's say, beginning movie director, Steven Spielberg, that got famous with Jaws and created a lot of really wonderful movies like Indiana Jones, Back to the Future, Schindler's List, countless others, also as a producer involved in many, many projects, who till then rather did smaller movies but had the chance to do it because he directed a movie about a guy driving a car and getting harassed by a semi-truck. Duel, which is, by the way, also a very good movie. And the production of the movie was a complete disaster because it was the first movie, again, the first, that was filmed on open water. And it went horribly over budget, over twice the amount of money needed. And it was over three times the amount of shooting days. And Steven Spielberg was convinced that he would never find work again. They wanted to finish in roughly 55 days, and they shot 159. And it was such a troubled production. Chuck was breaking down. They basically only had the scenes written the night before they were supposed to be shot. And the script was so different from the book that's based on. It's based on a book that Spielberg told the actors not to read the book, to not be influenced by it. So high pressure with a really interesting and really good result, which also pops up on many lists, like Quentin Tarantino, if you're interested in him. He has a whole list of movies where he says those are the greatest movies ever done. And the very number one movie, he would say that's the best movie ever done. That's Rio Bravo with John Wayne. But right on the second place, there's Jaws. And because it's, yeah, a good movie. And good things take time and pressure. And just to give you a feeling for it, the movie poster that everybody knows, this picture with a woman swimming on the surface of the water and the shark being from below coming up like this, it took 6 months to concept this poster. The artist needed 6 months to get it right. But now it's iconic. You have it everywhere. Everybody recognizes it immediately. People have it on their t-shirt. They have it on their walls. But effort and time. Good. Let's get into the movie. So the movie, the protagonist is Martin Brody. And he's a police chief in Amity Island, which is a very quiet town, basically a tourist town for the summer where people go to a beach. And it's on an island. And the thing is, nothing happens there. It's pretty quiet. He's a police chief who's at a place where no crime happens, where people only have very small requests. They complain about parking zones. They complain about low-level vandalism. So nothing really happens. So he's there, but his problem is really that he can't take responsibility. So his modus operandi and living, and this is externalized and shown by the way how he interacts with people, is to warn people about things, not to do things. And right at the start of the movie, where he tells his kids, they're not supposed to play at the swing. And of course, they go to the swing and get hurt. This is the first time we see blood in the movie. And this is what he does for the first half of the movie, telling people, oh, don't go to the beach. Oh, don't do that. Oh, you should not do that. But it's not him getting involved. It's always telling people what they should and should not do. So he's a pushover. Basically, everybody can bring him to change his mind or not push for a specific solution. So when in the beginning, the girl gets attacked and it's pretty clear that something horrific happened to her and it was a shark, he wants to close the beach. But the mayor, he disagrees. And Brody can't close the beach because it's summer season and it's Brody's very first season. And in summer, all the tourists come and the town needs the money to get basically over the winter. So it would be a huge hit because it's before the 4th of July weekend. People are coming and you can't close the beach. So he is sitting there idly and other people telling him what to do. And he's a police chief. Like he should have the authority what to do and what not to do. And he likely has that, but he's not allowed. And this is a standard thing when you want to have a story. You have a protagonist and this protagonist needs a flaw, a fatal flaw, something that hinders them living their normal life. And here we can bring in Jung in psychology because what we know, of course, all human beings are flawed in a sense, or let's say incomplete. It means they maybe have a maladaption to life. They maybe have a wrong approach, or they had some bad experiences. The psyche itself is always pushing to create a whole human being. And it does this by a mechanism that Jung called compensation, which means if you go too far in a certain direction, your psyche will try to catch up to you, to bring you also to the other side, to bring you back into balance, that you're not only one-sided, but that you're a balanced, more complete human being, which is not necessarily a fun thing to experience. But the flaw here from Brody is that he's avoiding danger and he's avoiding to get involved. He's just talking, speaking, but not so much action. And this is something he needs to learn. And this is then basically what the movie is about, because in a story, a character has an arc, change, a transformation of personality of the person themselves from the starting point of the flaw to their more complete human beingness. And this means for Jung very often going into the dark, going into the places where you do not want to go, because this is where the highest potential is found. These are the places you have ignored the most, and this is where the most potential for growth development are. So for this, it is necessary to rattle awake consciousness. This has to be a shock. It's consciousness does not want to change. Consciousness is inert. And the psychological shock to move the person has to be of an equal weight. And a good way Jung described to get someone to consciousness and to pay attention is to smack them in the face. And we have this in the movie. Brody is sitting idly on the beach while knowing that there's a shark in the water killing people, but he's not clothing the beach because the mayor told him that he could. So he's watching while a kid got attacked and killed. And later the mother is approaching him and smacking him in the face because she's saying, I know that you know, and you did not do anything. So the first half of the movie is really Brody getting into contact with the shark, but not really, mostly indirectly through the experiences that other people have. But a lot of people are suffering because the shark is there and it's killing people. And this is part of the backstory of Brody, because he was not always there in Amity Beach. He was before in New York. And we find it out through the movie that he's running away from there because he says it's like a jungle, it's crazy, it's all the violence, it's all the horrible things. But it's he who wanted to become a policeman. So his life story is there's danger and his reaction is avoidance. So he's running away from his police position in New York to Amity Beach to be away from the danger. But this is life. Life catches up on you. You cannot run away from danger. It comes back double and triple so that you change your ways. And it comes back as a shark. The shark is there for Brody to bring him into a higher being. But this means also the death of the old Brody, his old ways. And he's supposed to do something, but he does not do something. And you see this escalation through the first half of the movie, that the shark basically gets closer and closer to him. And it gets up to the point where his son gets attacked by the shark and almost killed. So before it's just other people, other people's children. But then it is his child. And he even lets him play in the water, even though that he knows that there's a shark in the water, he still cannot really say no. He say, oh, be careful, don't go into the open water, go into the pond. But the shark goes into the pond. So there's no way escaping the shark. It's coming closer and closer to mess with his life. So the shark is really, really interesting from a Jungian point of view, of a symbolic view, because we have a lot of concepts that's associated with there. One of course is sharks live in water, and water is like the standard symbolization for the unconscious, the things that you do not know that are foreign. And the explanation for Jung is that you cannot see what is below water. It just pops up, similar as with the unconscious. You suddenly get an idea. You suddenly have a dream or a vision that pops out of nowhere. It comes up and then disappears again, just like fish that come to the surface, but then they're back in the dark, in the unknown place. And interestingly enough, Amity Beach is an island in the water, surrounded by ocean. And what Jung describes very often as a metaphorical picture, how the psyche is structured, is that you have the island of consciousness where you can act and you can do things willfully, is surrounded by water, unconscious. And in the beginning, when people are small children, there's basically no island. It's only unconscious, it's only instincts, there's no coherence, there's only acting out, there's no continuity. But as people develop and go through puberty and through education, the island of consciousness gets bigger and more stable. But still, the unconscious can be so strong that it overthrows the island and washes everything away that's on there. And this can be in extreme psychological conditions like schizophrenia, the most extreme example for Jung. And the funny thing is, Brody is afraid of water. And where does he go? He goes to a beach and an island. In the movie, they don't show the shark a lot. It's more, in the beginning, you never really see it. You only see it indirectly. You only see it by, for example, when the first girl gets killed, you only see her whooshing around in the water. By the way, that was not acting. She was caught in a contraption. So there was some line and they wanted to pull her back and forth, but her foot got horribly stuck. So this was real pain, real fear. And this is how you could make good horror movies. Like the most, many of the classical horror movies are about like tormenting female actresses to give very realistic screams. For example, Psycho or also The Shining. Those are real women in distress. Also, and Jaws, or we see just the fin, or we see later the yellow, not crates, but barrels moving on the water. And this has a very specific reason. This was not intentional. So many things went wrong. And one of the things that they did wrong for the movie was they did not anticipate when they filmed in salt water that there would be salt water. They built three models, but they were not fit to be operated in salt water. So they corroded, they stuck. They had many, many technical problems. So they got so frustrated that they decided, okay, we just will hint at the shark and we'll show it indirectly. Also, through the music that was done by John Williams and has this very famous theme, is dun 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 dun, which is also similar to how we experience things from the unconscious. We don't experience them as complete things. We see bits and pieces and we feel rather the presence and they're not really graspable. Suddenly things are happening, but we don't know why. And we cannot experience them directly, but rather only indirectly through other things. And in the end, this was of a good decision to do it indirectly because the suspense was way higher. This is more than in the style of Alfred Hitchcock, for example, to have some more ominous terror going on in the background. There are some phrases in the movie that fit perfectly to describe certain Jungian concepts. For example, there's this expert for sharks that gets to the beach because he was called, and his name is Hooper. And there's this one time in the movie where they think they caught the shark and they cut it up and they want to look inside whether they are still like remnants of the previous victims. And he says, sharks eat everything. And if we look into the psyche, there is something that eats everything. And this thing is called a complex, which means for Jung, the psyche works like an energetic system. And the energy that is operating there is libido. And we, with our island ego consciousness, we have some libido to make things happen. But a lot of things happen by themselves, similar as the body does things by itself, like breathing, digesting, healing. We don't need to do it consciously. We can move consciously, but we can also move unconsciously. Similar in the psyche, a lot of things happen automatically and they can gather. They can, energy-wise, really clump together, especially when consciousness is not taking care of certain things. So the development of consciousness should be to integrate more and more parts, because if they get not integrated, they're in parallel and they run their own system, their own life, and can create their own life. So if you ignore too many things in your own psyche and they drop down below the surface into the unconscious, they can become autonomous psychic forces that interfere with the life of people. And he called that complexes. And this is one staple of Jungian psychology, but also of Freudian psychology, that you have psychological forces that work autonomously in the psyche, causing trouble. And this is an apt description. Everything that you discard in your own life does not disappear. It goes into the unconscious and it gathers there. And if it's enough material, it becomes a complex and it can even become a second personality. So it becomes more complex, more autonomous, proportional to the things that are disregarded. So if you don't live your complete life, the things that you should be living are still there in the background, waiting. They're not really gone. They're just doing their own thing and accumulating. And later, Quint, also a shark expert, talks about how sharks have these very black eyes and they seem like dead, these very dead eyes, and they only come alive when they're eating. And similar is that for unconscious contents. They are also dormant. They are below our level of consciousness. So that's why we cannot perceive them. They are in the background. But they can become activated once they get libido. So you can purposely put libido into unconscious content. For example, when you try to remember something, you're concentrating on that. And then you pull it up into your consciousness, and then you can examine it or reflect on it. And similar to that, of course, when you have the libido for certain things dropping into the unconscious and working there, suddenly the thing that is dormant, that is dead-like, becomes alive and starts gobbling up what it can. So when Jung in dream analysis looked at the dreams of his patients, he saw some symbols or images that are very typical. And very typical for him, and something that he would look for, would be animals. Because our psyche is not only human, if we go far back enough, it's also animal-like. And certain aspects of our psyche and also of our body are represented in animals. For example, he talks about the sympathetic nervous system, which is a very old system, in dreams or visions being represented by the snake. Or when you have, for example, sexual energy, that is then represented by a bull. Or you have thoughts, abstract ideas, that they are represented as birds. And you find this also in mythology and fairy tales. So the shark being there bodily for Brody, but metaphorical for us because it's happening in the story, is representing that there are some very old instincts that are missing in the psyche of Brody that need to be integrated, that are coming up by themselves because they have been ignored and now pushing against consciousness so that they become integrated and part of the psyche. Because what Jung says, the complexes are not there to bother people. It's like a healing mechanism. They become stronger and stronger so that you pay attention to them. But of course, these things are then frightful because these are the things you did not want to pay attention to for a very long time. So you run away. But the more you run away, the worse this gets. So when things emerge from the unconscious, they always look archaic, brutal, simple, primitive, because they cannot be understood. What's happening in gaining sophistication in ideas and contents, it's all in consciousness. This is the refining part, but the rough parts, the rough pieces come from the unconscious. So it looks rather disagreeable what first emerges from the unconscious, but it is very important. And when it's integrated, it disappears or changes its form to another thing. And this is a concept that's not so often talked about, which is called attitude, and what he would teach his patients during therapy, to change their attitude approach to certain problems. Because when you confront them, you are able to integrate them. But if you run away, they will always be separated from you. But you cannot run away because they're supposed to be part of you. So, of course, Brody has been running away his whole life to the point where the thing that can rattle him up is a shark, which is in water, what he is afraid of, but not any shark. But it's a huge, huge shark, a boat-eating shark, which is also really smart because it can bait people and it tricks people. So it's not a dumb animal. It's pretty smart. And it's playing games. And this is the shadow part of Brody that he needs to find a way to incorporate into his psychology. And another concept that Jung talks about, which is very important, and a reason for a lot of, for example, projection, is if things only happen inside of you, they are very easy to ignore and disregard, which means certain problems need to become bodily to be taken seriously. For example, the anima problem of a man can only be taken seriously once it's projected on a woman, because then you have something in the outside world that you cannot push aside. For example, this is why he sees not so much difference or distance between psychological contents, but also material contents, seeing there also a huge overlap, that there's, let's say, synchronistic situations happening to you that are very specific to you and your psychological state and the things you need to do, calling you out. This can also be in a complex situation, something rather simple, like you're misspeaking, or you're tripping, or having accidents, which is not something unusual, because your psyche is not one thing, it's not unified. It's many different things that are working at the same time. So this is to get your attention, and things need to be bodily. And the problem of Brody is so big that it needs to become basically a shark that's confronting him bodily so he cannot run away. And another topic, which is not mentioned in the movie, but from a Jungian perspective is very interesting. When you have fish living in the water, many of them are filled with mercury, as you might know or not know. And the smaller the fish, and the shorter the lifespan, the less the mercury. So this is a fish you should eat, because mercury is not good for human beings. But the older the fish gets, the bigger the fish gets, and the more likely the fish is eating other fish, the more likely it is to be full of mercury. And sharks are full of mercury because they live a very long time. They eat a lot of smaller fish that in turn also eat smaller fish. And mercury is associated with the Greek god Mercurius, Hermes, the messenger of the gods, also the patron of alchemists. When they do their alchemical work, they're visited by Mercurius, who's guiding their attention and guiding their works and helping them doing their work. So this is something that is very likely unintentional in the movie, but interesting in the concepts when talking about a shark. So what is also interesting is the reaction that people have to the shark, which is a lot of denial, which is a standard thing when you have a psychological problem, there's denial. But also even then, when people know that there's a shark in the water, they still go into the water because they see other people go into the water. There's a psychological effect or phenomena that Jung mentioned. People behave very differently in groups, and people do stupid things in groups, and they do things that they never would do alone. So people go into the water, people get killed, even though that they know there's a shark, there's irrefutable proof. And also something that's maybe more American and I find always funny is there's shark attacks and the first thing they sell is shark souvenirs. But this is just American style. This is fun. So in this movie, it's not only, of course, Brody, but it's also Hooper and Quint. And those are both very important. Because Hooper, I mentioned him before, he's a scientist. So he has a lot of background knowledge for the shark. He's studying them. He's learning about them. He has theories about them. And he comes there as an expert to learn more. And he also telling them, okay, the shark you have caught, that's not the real shark. The real shark is even bigger. And Brody is learning from him all this background knowledge about sharks, how they behave, what they are. And this is already a form of integration, of approaching the problem, learning more about it, to understand it better, to differentiate. Oh, it's not only a shark. It behaves a certain way. It needs certain things. So Hooper is there to give him guidance on that, helping him with this problem with the shark, to understand the shark better, and take him out also to the water where Brody actually doesn't want to go because he doesn't like going on boats. But Hooper provides this abstract, high-level knowledge about sharks. But then you have the other person. And the other person is very important, which is Quint. And Quint is more a working-class man. And he has a lot of experience with sharks because he's hunting them. He's killing them. You have Hooper, which is more a rich kid, so from more like elite. And you have Quint, who's a very simple working class guy who is interesting because he's also very close to the shadow of Brody. The shark as a shadow is a very hard concept to grasp because for him, the shark is too different from him. But Quint is a human being, so he's approachable. You can build a relationship with him. And Quint himself is a kind of monster. He kills shark. He also kills. His ship is also called Orca, which is one of the few natural predators that sharks have. orcas hunt sharks, they kill sharks. And his view on sharks is highly differentiated because it had so much to do with them. He notices sounds and movement and all these little signs. Oh, there's a shark, there's something might be approaching. The other guys can't see him. And this is the sign of a differentiated consciousness when you're able to perceive and act to things that might be invisible to other people. It's just his knowledge, his training, but also his real experience. This is also why he does not work so much with equipment. Like Hooper. Hooper has a lot of equipment. He has a whole boat just filled with monitors, radar, sonar, all this stuff. Quint does not have that. Quint basically has his senses, and he trusts his senses, his immediate experience to find the shark and also to kill the shark. There's a whole dichotomy between Brody and Quint. Like Quint is super confident, he's abrasive, he is makes vulgar jokes and pushes away people. He does not really care what people think and so on. And this is a contrast to Brody, which was just a pushover, trying in kind of way, trying to please people and just stay out of trouble, while Quint searches trouble. And he also wants to pay paid for that, a very high amount. So just a disagreeable person, all the traits that Brody needs to learn, a complete loner, basically. So when Jung talks about the shadow, he very often also calls that the inferior man or primitive man. Both terms are not so much a value judgment, but rather an earlier way of doing things, simpler way of doing things, how things, for example, were done in the past. And this is Quint hunting sharks with spears, right? So when they're on the boat, the first half of the movie is on land, the second part is on the boat. Quint is teaching Brody, and Brody is completely open to that. And he's starting to copying the behavior of Quint. He swears, he shoots at the shark, he becomes more braver, becomes a little bit like a father-son relationship with Quint, basically pushing Brody the whole time to do things, to learn things. For example, to learn how to do the knot, right? How to shovel the bait. So he becomes part of the ship. He becomes part of the circle of people who know about sharks and how to deal with sharks. But of course, Quint has a negative side in the sense he really is a loner and he wants to do things alone. So he does not call for help, and he even destroys the boat equipment that they cannot call the Coast Guard, even though that the boat is damaged. And he's obsessed by sharks, and he threatens their well-being and the ship to kill the shark himself. And you see it in his face. He's completely possessed. And there's a very good reason for that, because there's a backstory to Quint. And his backstory is that he served on a U.S. ship near Japan when the bomb dropped on Hiroshima. And submarine from the Japanese Navy sunk the American ship, and the sailors went into the water. But because it was a secret mission, nobody knew that they were there. So they stayed there for several days. And there were sharks in the water, and they were picking off people one by one. And only few people survived. One of them was Quint. And this fostered his hate for sharks. His story is really that of getting revenge. And in part, he became a monster through that. He became shark-like in a sense, as he's a cold killer, only thinking about getting the prey and drawing blood. And here there are a lot of interesting parallels to the stories of the other figures. For example, Hooper has also a shark story. He says when he was a small child, he had a small boat, and he would go on the water with that. And one day, a shark would jump into the boat and rip it apart, basically. But it was a baby shark. And he swam back to the shore and was then totally fascinated by sharks and wanted to learn more and commit his life to it. And this is the typical experience that people have when they, for example, encounter archetypes, is utter fascination or pure terror. And this is what both symbolize. And there's a third way, and this is only hinted at. It's not directly shown at the movie, but it's when they're on the boat and they compare the scars, their stories. Brody also looks at his side because he has also a scar. And it's mentioned through bits and pieces in discussions before that he likely also had a boat accident. So it's also possible that it was with the shark. So all of them had in their life contact with a shark, but choose completely different paths how to deal with it. Brody ran away out of fear. Hooper wanted to go and learn everything about sharks and study them out of fascination. And Quint wanted to kill them all. So when you have a story and you have a protagonist, very often the story is that they build relationships with other people and the relationships change the protagonist. So the things that Hooper knows and that Quint can do, Brody has to learn to become a more complete human being. And this is what happens in the second part of the movie when they're on the boat and they try to get unified, because in the beginning it's just chaos. Brody does not know what to do. Hooper does not get along with Quint, but in the end they're singing and they're approaching the shark. And we're getting into the finale, into the final day, when the shark comes and starts destroying the boat. So in every story, you have the situation that in the end, a dragon has to be killed by the hero. It cannot be done by everyone else, anybody else. So it has to happen by them and them alone. So in stories, you might notice that you get rid of all the other people. In this case, Quint dies because Quint is completely obsessed. He, in a sense, never left the Pacific. So he gets killed by the shark, as it should have happened a long time ago. And Hooper is hiding at the seafloor in his scuba diving outfit. So it's a sinking boat with Brody at the mast. And then the shark comes and he's slowly sinking into the ocean. And this is similar to the alchemical process in the sense of that there's a certain stage that is called of killing the green lion. So killing the green lion is more associated with killing it with bare hands, but killing in a symbolic way is meant with depotentiating something, a content. So Brody has to kill the shark, and it has to be him who's killing the shark. This took him the midpoint of the movie to understand this and the end of the movie to actually do this. And how does he do it? It's so cool and so interesting. The shark has eaten tried to eat one of the compressed gas tanks from Hooper that he used for scuba diving. And he has it still in his mouth. And Brody is on the mast and he's shooting at the shark with the gun, which is from Quint. So what do they have? You have the fire from Quint. You have the air from Hooper. You have the shark in the water. And you need all those things to get then the explosion and then to kill the shark. But you have, again, a parallel thing to alchemy, which is also dealing with water, fire, air, and earth. Of course, given the question now, we have the three things. Where's earth? Where's the fourth thing? Typical alchemical problem. We have three. Where's the fourth? It's on land. It's his wife. The wife of Brody is earth. So it's a typical problem, for example, in Christianity, also on the cross. You have water, you have fire, you have air. But earth is missing. The feminine aspect is missing. This is one of the reasons why the dragon is killed in the end, because this is a Western story. And in Western stories, the dragon has to be killed. In Eastern stories, you integrate and more like befriend the dragon. In Western stories, it has to be killed. So the book was not like this. It was more that shark gets damaged by small wounds and then dies slowly, basically. But we have a Hollywood finale, so it has to be a big explosion. And it was even the case that Hooper was supposed to die. But Steven Spielberg, as a director, really liked Hooper. And he also had some really cool footage of the shark in Australia ripping apart a cage. So he wanted to use this footage, and he liked Hooper anyways. So Hooper survived till the end, because this is also the normal way of people that are helpful and necessary for the hero to disappear and to die, because they're not needed anymore. They're integrated now. They have become part of the hero. Same as Brody learns the confrontational part, this aggressive part of him that has always been missing his life. He's living out in the end, so the shark is not needed anymore. He's now integrated. He has become shark-like. The training of Quint, who was also shark-like but could not handle it and costed him his life. Quint was also too one-sided. And he did not listen, so he had to pay the price, the ultimate price at the end. Yeah, I want to just tell some basic things about storytelling. because they also apply here very well. If you start a movie, start with people dying. Most movies start with this, that somebody is dying, and this amazing way to grab people. Another concept for storytelling is dramatic irony, which is characters in the story have different knowledge than the audience. In this case, the audience knows that there's a shark. They can hear it, the music changes, but the people do not know. And this is a very old device, also goes back to Hitchcock and other people. Like when you have two people talking at the table, it's dead boring. But if you have a ticking time bomb under the table and then two people talking, that's interesting. People pay attention. And similarly, the movie is way better because the characters do not always know that the shark is there. And that creates attention. Also, the movie is split very evenly in two parts. First one land, second water. And there's one very cool scene at the end of the midpoint shift where the son of Brody got attacked. And he tells his wife, like, okay, we should go home now. And what is she asking? She's asking, do you mean New York? Which implies, like, okay, do you run away again? Because we've run away before, should we run away again? And he says, no, we stay here. And this already changes his attitude to the whole affair and how he will approach the problem. He's now dead set to confront the shark. And the last thing I want to talk about is, I talked before about the blood, also symbolic, very often for libido, of energizing things, animating things, because we know things, if they're moving, likely they're full of blood. The way he used it in the movie was very interesting. You don't see so much blood. You don't see so much of the shark. You don't see so much horror. They removed it even from the wardrobe and all the sets, the color red. So when it appears, it has more punch, which is also something that Tarantino does. He doesn't show a lot of blood, but this is the most memorable thing. So people say, like, the movies are bloody. So they really intensify it by only showing the blood for very short moments. And if we tell stories, we should be careful what they cause, because when the movie came out and got very popular, there were a lot of shark killings. Like, people are easy to influence, similar as when Finding Nemo came out, everybody wanted to have a clownfish, which was causing a lot of clownfish being released through the toilet, because this is how the movie showed it, to the ocean, which is not how it works in real life. Similar, there was a huge shark killing spree at that time, and not so many sharks actually attacked people. So I want to thank you for your attention. As you've noticed, I like the movie, and thanks for paying attention. I hope you learned something.
This was this event's topic. Thanks for tuning in. During an event, a discussion part follows after the presentation where all attendees discuss the just presented topic or other Jungian concepts. If you also want to join, find the group on meetup.com. The name of the group is CG Jung Helpdesk. Also make sure to subscribe to the podcast on the platform of your choice. See you next time.